Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Fool's Goldfinger to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the just world fallacy, also known as victim blaming.
Yeah, so on episode 50, I interviewed Dr. Bo Bennett, the author of the brilliant website Logically Fallacious. Yep. And he said that one of the things that causes logical fallacies, basically, is cognitive bias. They're often born in cognitive biases. And this is a great example of that, because there's a cognitive bias called fundamental attribution error. And a cognitive bias basically is just where our usual kind of quick ways of thinking let us down or send us kind of reliably in one direction that isn't necessarily helpful for us. It's where stereotypes come from and all kinds of things like that. And this one is where you attribute your success in something, like if you're in a good situation, you attribute that to the good choices you've made and your talent and ability and stuff like that. But if you see someone else in a similar situation, you're more likely to say that they got lucky or they were in the right place at the right time or that kind of thing. And in a negative way, if you see someone in a bad situation, you attribute that to their choices and negative traits about them. But if you're in a bad situation yourself, you're more likely to kind of make more excuses for yourself and say, well, this is just circumstance, it's bad luck, these things happened to me that were outside of my control. This is incredibly common. Everyone does it. And cognitive biases are really, really, really difficult to... we don't even talk about eliminating them. We ideally, as critical thinkers, try to mitigate them and try to at least be aware of our biases.
Yeah, exactly. Notice them and say, that's where that's come from. Yeah. I'll try not to think like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this mode of thinking, which, as I say, everyone does, is responsible for this fallacy, which is basically looking at the world and saying, well, people get what they deserve. It is a just world. If I'm doing well, it's because I made good choices. If people are doing badly, it's because they made bad choices. The just world name was coined by a social psychologist in the 60s called Melvin Lerner, who decided, he theorized at least, that a belief in a just world is what allows otherwise compassionate individuals to rationalize an injustice they believe they couldn't stop or prevent. So if they see bad stuff happen, then rather than doing something about it, they can just say, well, that's because that person did, is a bad person. So they don't feel the need to actually do something. And he did various experiments. He did experiments with people watching someone get electric shocks, and the worse the person suffered, although they were pretending, the observers kind of came up with explanations. They thought that person was a worse person. He did one experiment where he had two men doing puzzles, solving puzzles. And at the end, one of them was randomly awarded a large sum of money. And they had observers looking at this happening. They told the observers that the reward was completely random, that it was not tied to how good they were at puzzles. But when they were asked later to evaluate the two men, the observers said that the one who got the award was smarter, more talented and better at solving puzzles and more productive. Even though they'd been specifically told the award was random.
That it's utterly random and not tied to it at all.
Because they were seeing the the good thing that happened to someone as being somehow tied to their talent, their ability, their choices that they were making.
What they had done, Golly, that's how deep-seated and hardwired it is.
It's Innes. It's really difficult to shake.
Yeah.
But it's not Innes to the same degree in everyone. A couple of researchers at Harvard University and UCLA conducted surveys to examine the characteristics of people who have strong beliefs in a just world, who kind of feel this very strongly. And they found that people who have a strong tendency to believe in a just world also tend to be more religious, more authoritarian, more conservative, more likely to admire political leaders and existing social institutions, and more likely to have a negative attitude towards underprivileged groups. So Trump supporters, basically.
yeah, there you go. Well, that's it. I read an article this week, by Alistair Campbell, he was Blair's spin doctor, but he's now a kind of reporter on all things politic. And he adopted the phrase from somebody else that he'd read called pseudo-populist. And he says, well, Boris is a pseudo-populist. It's about making people feel that they are better off than somebody else, because then that plays into this kind of just world thing, which says, well, they are to blame for their misfortune. I'm in charge of my destiny, so everything's fine with me.
Yeah.
And of course it isn't, because we all live in the same world and it's deliberately being decimated by the few at the expense of the many. But as long as you've got some people who you can say, well, you're making terrible choices, that's why you're worse than I am, then I feel better than you. And that's all you need. So, So it's kind of, it plays into this innate bias.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a poll done in 2017 by the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation asking basically about poor people, asking about why are some people poor, essentially.
Yeah.
And 46% of Christians basically said it was because they're lazy.
Right.
Compared with 29% of non-Christians.
Nice Christian attitude.
So, even though poverty and, you know, giving up your worldly goods is supposedly a Christian thing to do. They see it as, you know, if you're poor, it's your own fault, basically. You should work a bit harder.
Your problem.
And in that same poll, when they split it up between Democrats and Republicans, 26% of Democrats blamed a lack of effort for poverty, while 63% of Republicans did. So that's what we're working with, essentially.
Yeah.
And
there you go. Yeah.
And so that's what leads to the kinds of examples that we have here today. First one from Trump comes after the shooting of Rayshard Brooks, who was the black man who had a bit too much to drink and fell asleep in the drive-through lane in a Wendy's. He was kind of woken up by the police and they tried to arrest him. He resisted, grabbed one of the police officers' tasers and ran away. And while he was running away, the policeman shot him in the back and killed him.
Shot him in the back.
So his crime was ultimately drunk driving and then resisting arrest.
And neither of which is the penalty is death.
No. And this is what Trump had to say about it.
The event that took place yesterday was, I thought it was a terrible situation, but you can't resist a police officer. And, you know, if you have a disagreement, you have to take it up after the fact. It was a very sad, very, very sad thing. And look, you take a look. It was out of control. The whole situation was out of control. I heard today and just got a report that the police officer's lawyer said that he heard a sound like a gun, like a gunshot, and he saw a flash in front of him. So that's an interesting, you know, I don't know that I would have necessarily believe that, but I will tell you that's a very interesting thing, and maybe that's so. They're going to have to find out. It's up to justice right now. It's going to be up to justice. I hope he gets a fair shake, because police have not been treated fairly in our country. They have not been treated fairly.
Yeah, police haven't been treated fairly. So, yeah, when Trump says, I hope he gets a fair shake, he is talking about the policeman who shot the black man, not, you know, because the guy's dead.
Not.
So he doesn't, he doesn't get a fair shake.
A bit disingenuous to say, well, if you've got a dispute, you need to take it up afterwards.
Yeah.
Well, there's never any afterwards.
But yeah, Trump is essentially saying, yeah, it's a bad thing that the police shot someone, but, you know, it's his own fault. He shouldn't have resisted. He shouldn't have run away.
Because you shouldn't. When it comes to being black, in front of a policeman, just don't resist. Because if you do, bad things happen.
And it's a very common thing that comes out when, you know, Jacob Blake in Wisconsin, when he was shot in the back, people said, oh, you know, he was possibly maybe reaching for a knife. George Floyd, obviously, people were saying, well, he was a career criminal and a drug addict, and he held a woman at gunpoint years before, none of which factored into the fact that he was being arrested for possibly passing a counterfeit $20 bill. And that isn't a death sentence case. There's
no.
You know, but they bring up these things and say, well, you know, these are bad people. The bad thing happens to them because they're bad people. They've made bad choices, and it kind of explains it away for them. It means that they then don't feel like there is the need to do something about it.
Yes, exactly. They haven't got to be outraged and do something about it and engage with the Black Lives Matter movement in a positive way. For instance, they can just go, "Oh yeah, well, you know, shit happens to shit people." So, I mean, it's beyond my control. I can't actually do anything about that, which is another way of saying I'm all right because I'm successful in my choices.
Another example of Trump using it as an excuse not to do anything is after the shooting at the Tree of Life synagogue, after which he was asked about whether it was maybe finally time to do something, any fucking thing about gun control. And he said this.
This has little to do with it. If you take a look, if they had protection inside, the results would have been far better. This is a dispute that will always exist, I suspect. But if they had some kind of a protection inside the temple, maybe it could have been a very much different situation. They didn't.
So if they had had an armed guard inside the synagogue, then this wouldn't have happened to them.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's... So they were wrong to not have, you know, massively armed people in case there was ever a massively armed person coming at them. Yeah.
So this bad thing that happened to them...
armed guy's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because they made a bad choice.
Down to them.
Essentially.
They didn't have a tank in the synagogue.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
Oh, God. Damn it.
our third example is actually from the next generation of fallacious Trumps. This is from Eric. He's actually defending something that his father said, because this is when Roger Ailes of Fox was publicly accused, I guess, because he'd been accused for many years, but publicly accused of sexual harassment. And Donald Trump was asked by USA Today what he would want Ivanka to do about it. You know, what if Ivanka was working there and had this experience? And he said, basically, that he would hope that she would get a new career or go to a different company, which is not necessarily the best way to deal with that kind of thing. And people thought, that's not the answer. And so they asked Eric about it on, actually, ironically, Charlie Rose was asking him about sexual harassment.
Right.
And he said that this is what he thought Ivanka would have done.
Ivanka is a strong, you know, powerful woman. She wouldn't allow herself to be, you know, objected, you know, to it. And by the way, you should certainly take it up with human resources. And I think, you know, she definitely would as a strong person. At the same time, I don't think she would allow herself to be subjected to that.
So the issue is that the woman who was at the result of the harassment was because she allowed herself to be subjected to it.
Yeah, she allowed herself to be subjected to sexual harassment. But Ivanka, being a strong person, a strong woman, wouldn't allow herself to be subjected to it. Fuck all the way off.
Yeah. And when you get there, fuck off some more. Yeah. Wow. That is really, the usual. Well, if you go out dressed like that, what can you expect?
Yeah. And it's another common feeling that people have about domestic abuse is saying, well, you know, if I was in that situation, I would leave. I wouldn't stay in that situation. And it's absolutely not that simple. And you're calling the person who is experiencing that you know, weak and helpless essentially stupid for not making, and their own fault for not making the right choice, the choice you would make if you were in that situation. It is horrifying.
And because it's your view that I wouldn't do that in my situation, that goes back to the cognitive bias that I always make good choices and the right choice.
Yeah, that's why I don't find myself in that situation.
So it's amazing, isn't it, that you know, from those statistics from the Christian fraternity, you would think that it's a very humane thing to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and say, yes, I would probably do exactly the same in those circumstances. I don't know that I would do anything different.
Yeah, but you're weirdly assuming Christians are humane.
Yeah. yeah, but, well, exactly, that's my only point of reference, you know, from the propaganda that I was taught at school, that they are, you know, nice people, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and turn the other cheek, and, you know, be it, look out for your fellow man, and
take in
all that kind of
poor
stuff.
Strangers who need help.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't cross to the other side. Yeah. All of that. Yeah. But no, it's oddly, and where does it come from? You know, so it's the actual story of humanity is Cain and Abel. You know, killing the brother, and in order to get, that's what it is. It's not Jesus. That's he came along to kind of fix all that because we fucked it up since the Garden of Eden. And you think, well, and yet that's what we are, an Old Testament race. We're kind of people that will just be jealous of other people's success and derogatory towards people who fail.
Yeah.
You know, you're failing because you're stupid. You know, I'm succeeding because I'm brilliant. And that guy is succeeding because he's had all the luck in the world.
Yeah.
So that you're, you know, I'm middle class, so I look up to him.
Yeah. Part of it is within the fallacy leans more towards people who are successful, even if they're other people, are successful because they're good people or because they make good choices. And that, I think, feeds into the lionization of Trump. Mm. The fact that he is successful means he must be good. He must be talented and that stuff.
Well, that's certainly the message that he tells every possible time he opens his mouth.
So we got one more example in this section, because when you start looking for examples of this, it's just every fucking where. So
can't stop. Yeah.
This is from Senator Mo Brooks, Republican senator, and this was when Trump was trying to get Obamacare overturned and failing again and again. When they finally came out with a Republican healthcare bill, which totally failed, this was one thing that Mo Brooks said about it.
My understanding is that it will allow insurance companies to require people who have higher healthcare costs to contribute more to the insurance pool that helps offset all these costs, thereby reducing the cost to those people who lead good lives, they're healthy, you know, they've done the things to keep their bodies healthy. And right now, those are the people who've done things the right way that are seeing their costs skyrocketing.
Again, fuck off. So
there you go. Yeah.
This is the people who are healthy are people who have made good choices. They've led good lives. They've done everything right. Meaning all the people who are unhealthy and have pre-existing conditions or fucking cancer or whatever are, you know, the opposite of that. They didn't make good choices.
They just made
the
wrong choices.
Right.
Yeah.
And that essentially was the underpinning of that healthcare bill. Was, you know, no, you don't get healthcare. You're not a good person. You're not good enough.
Well, that was the argument when the post-war government set up the NHS in the UK, that there was those arguments that it was, well, in fact, the whole of the Tory party's view of the welfare state, of which the NHS was part, is that, well, people will just take advantage. You know, they're there through their own fault. You know, they're ill because, you know, they can't afford to get healthcare because they've made the wrong choices. So the socialist government was all about, well, it ought to be free for everybody, not just those people. It should be free at the point of access for everyone, not just those people that could hitherto be able to afford it, but people who can't. And we as a society, as in the 20th century, in a post-war society ought to be able to support those people who are less advantaged than us. And yeah, they had to fight it through government. And you know, if you read some of the statements made at the time, they're very similar to Mo Brooks's stuff about what you mean. All of us well and wealthy people are going to have to pay for the poor and the unfortunate and the people that have made the wrong choices. You know, there is that correlation between only people who are stupid and lazy and poor get ill.
Yeah.
And it's their fault for being stupid and poor and making wrong choices and being unhealthy. It's their fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just ghastly.
And to be absolutely as fair as I can be to Mo Brooks, he did follow this up by saying,
don't feel you have to,
that that some people who have pre-existing conditions, you know, it's not through any fault of their own that they're in that situation.
Oh right, oh you know, nice of you to,
absolutely yeah. nice of him to acknowledge yeah. it, but that wasn't in any way addressed in the bill that they were trying to push. That they barely acknowledged that, and they were absolutely trying to, and went through several courts to try and strip the pre-existing conditions requirement of the insurance companies. So in a way, the fact they acknowledged it is worse, because you can in a way, weird way, accept that if they just don't get that people who have pre-existing conditions both exist and don't deserve to die, then their healthcare bill would make a lot more sense in that mindset. Yeah.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, speaking of the UK government and their attitude towards people, and health is their own fault and it's nothing that the government can do about it. Since Sajid Javid has become the new health secretary, who is, well, last month, was it? And then when he's had two jabs, but he caught COVID. On the 24th, and he recovered. On the 24th of July, he was tweeting the good news of his recovery. It's a relative term, good news. And he was extolling the virtues of the vaccine, get out of jail free card thing that has come along to save the government. And at the bottom of the tweet, he put, please, if you haven't yet, get your jab as we learn to live with rather than cower from this virus. So everybody just kind of went, no. So are you saying that the more than 100,000 people who caught it and died did so because they were too cowardly and not brave enough in the face of coronavirus? And it's not the government's fault, it's their lack of courage.
Yeah. Yeah. That I mean, that essentially is what they're saying.
COVID. Yeah. Is, that's basically what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
And the, yeah, because you can, you know, we learn to live with it, not everyone got to do that. It's like when people say, you know, people have been having babies naturally for you know, hundreds of thousands of years. Yeah, and enormous numbers of them were dying when they tried to do that.
Yes, exactly.
That's not a good answer.
And still are in the third world, yes. Yeah.
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 So learning to live with it.
Yeah, or the global south.
Is rather. Only the people who survive.
And not cowering in the face of it. You know, be brave. Go get it. And, you know, there's an even stronger element of the just well victim blaming fallacy behind the government's overall change of stance on COVID since Javid's appointment, because he's a proper bullish, fuck you lot, get back to work. Not that Matt Hancock didn't live by it before. But since Javid, this is an absolute declaration of how the government is no longer going to manage the control of the outbreak. Not that they ever did before, really. And in their usual policy of shifting responsibility and blame away from themselves, they invoke this fallacy to imply if you get COVID, it's your fault for not doing the right thing. And yeah, so the... Yeah. But even the people that get the jabs get COVID. So where does that land him? You know, it's all about, well, actually, it doesn't prevent COVID like we said it would. It just means you don't die from it. With that and a big dose of
COVID. We should say it absolutely still does prevent it, just not 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like 90 to 95% prevention, as well as reducing dramatically the severity of the illness.
Unfortunately, in Sajid's case, yes. And Yvette Cooper, the Labour MP, tweeted in response, 129,000 people who died didn't cower. They fought for their lives. Frontline workers didn't cower. They kept calm and carried on. Millions in lockdown didn't cower. They followed your rules and made sacrifices for others. So I'm glad you're recovered, but please never treat illness as a weakness. Yeah, and it's part of the bullish stance with Sajid is part of the continuing culture war that Boris employs to foment polarization. So we've now got the jabbed versus the jabbed nots, and there's no sense, we're talking about the social collective support post-war government, there's none of that with let's all get it to help the vulnerable, let's protect those who can't or won't get the jab. Although that kind of was the reason for the first lockdown, to shield the elderly. Let's, you know, save lives, protect the NHS. That was all a very socialist kind of sentiment. And, you know, it's cynically awful that they were hiding behind that. But, and the shielding the elderly didn't go terribly well either. And they're using the, if you don't get jabbed, I might get it from you, I'm looking out for me approach. So there's that war between, you know, there's the kind of the, if you're not getting the jab, then you're making a bad choice, you're a bad person, and what that's doing is threatening me. So that's the culture war that keeps kind of getting promoted. As, you know, they never come out and say that, but it's just behind that. And to a certain extent, the you know, it's promoted as the right thing to do. If you don't get it, you'll die, and that's your problem. There are people that do the right thing, and everyone else, does that mean we're doing the wrong thing? There was this notion in Victorian times of the deserving poor. So there was like the various classes of poor people. There were the poor, and then there was the deserving poor who are probably trying to get out of poverty, whereas the people that don't, they're just lazy and they're undeserving of our charity. And there's no difference, really. When Thatcher extolled Victorian values, that's precisely what she was talking about, that there are people who are deserving of our charity and there are for whom the welfare state is available, and there are people who don't deserve it, and we should withdraw that from them. Yeah. There we go. So, yeah. So example number two, British citizens returning from red countries, as we've got a traffic light system in the UK. If you come back from a red country and you're a British citizen, you're allowed back in the country, but you have to quarantine for 10 days in a hotel at your own expense. So here's a clip of interviews with people in quarantine and from Channel 5 News and on Good Morning Britain on ITV. There was an interview with Dominic Raab, who was questioned about, well, OK, how are you enforcing this? And just listen out for his reply vis-a-vis that. But also, he sticks in people who do the right thing.
They're all paying at least £1,750 to stay here. That's the minimum for one adult, not including children. For that, they expected a basic level of care and hygiene they claim wasn't met.
There were concerns about hygiene outside and inside rooms.
This rubbish has actually been there for at least 3 days.
They're finding that actually the people in the hotels aren't wearing masks. They're being allowed to go out to smoke cigarettes, which makes a nonsense of the isolation. It's all very well to have the idea. It's actually putting into place something to see it through, isn't it?
But as with enforcement across the board, not just in relation to this, but the wider social distancing and wider social measures and restrictions we've got in place, yes, it's difficult to enforce them. We do rely on people doing the right thing, but there is very clearly the penalties and the enforcement and the accountability, as we've already shown with the fines that have been levied, which have been high-level fines for those who are flouting the rules.
The phrase that they used was, this is quarantine, it's not a holiday.
So there are several things going on in there. So Dominic Raab evading spectacularly the question about, so that you're making people go into hotel at their own expense for all that price. If you were in a hotel for 10 days and it cost you £170 a night for a hotel, you would expect some level of service. And the question, quite rightly, to him is, so who's enforcing that they're provided with a, you know, humane service and that they're protected from, you know, not being allowed outside or the staff not wearing masks, all that stuff? Who's enforcing that? And he just spectacularly goes off and says, well, it's very difficult to enforce social distancing. We're relying on people doing the right thing. And then it ends up with one of the customers saying, they said to us, this is quarantine, not a holiday. So this is whole implication behind it is that you've come into this country from a red listed country. It's your fault. So you've just got to suffer the consequences. You know, it's proper victim blaming, because they're saying, well, you know, of course it's unhygienic. Of course we're not going to make sure that the isolation rules are enforced, because it's not a holiday.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Why would we bother to ended up to make it? Sure it's both effective,
yeah,
and not awful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah. And actually, they're not bothering to do either, because you know, somewhere along the line, someone's making a lot of money out of it, and it's been shifted out to private hands, so the government doesn't have to do anything about it. And they would just say, you know, very... I think it slipped out. It's saying, you know, we're relying on people to do the right thing. And actually, well, what is the right thing? We're doing the quarantining, and yet nobody's stopping staff not wearing masks or people going outside.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not enforcing it in some way or having a system there, it really isn't any different from self-isolating in your own home, is it? If they're just trusting the people to stay in the hotel and not mix with other people and not go out for a fag, then it's not any different from saying, okay, you can come in the country, but go to your house now and don't go out for 10 days. You're just trusting them.
Because they're British citizens, so they live here. Yeah, yeah. And in a way, you can guarantee you're not in a building full of people that have come from countries that have got virulent viruses. Yeah, in your own home. Subsequently, there's a law firm that are maintaining, they're suing the government, basically. They're saying that mandatory hotel quarantine is a fundamental breach of human rights. It has led to the false imprisonment of people who are fully vaccinated and have tested negative. Because the only difference between a red country and an amber country, in terms of what you have to do on your return, is, well, up until, and we'll talk about that later, up until recently, you had to quarantine, you had to self-isolate. And the difference between quarantine and self-isolation is a hotel bill.
Yeah.
Blame it on the people that have been away somewhere that we've decided is now dangerous and you want to come back. And example number three, because I was looking, you're right, there's so much stuff turns up when you type in, you know, government, it's your fault. And loads of stuff come up. Priti Patel is the Home Secretary. She's putting a new legislation which is going to make being a traveller or a Romani or a gypsy even more illegal. And Matthew Paris was writing, who's an ex-MP and a Times newspaper columnist, was writing a report on this. And in the comments section of it, so it's in the Times, and bear in mind, these are readers of the Times, and you kind of expect, maybe that's my cognitive bias, you kind of expect a level of decorum and politeness and etiquette and possibly even intelligence. But one of the comments was that their children are deprived of education is the fault of their lifestyle. Children moving all the time cannot have a settled education. That they die young is also their own fault too. There you have it, just blatantly done. So, you know, and it's of course nothing to do with the government policy of continually moving on travellers, and forcing them to do it. But the readers are just, it plays into their cognitive bias. It's their fault. They die young is their fault. And rather than questioning, well, why is it that they die young, or why is it that they can't be allowed to have a settled education? It's appalling to read. You go through the comment section and somebody is commenting in the comment section on how appalling the comments are. And that the that the kind of house rules, obviously some of the comments have been deleted because you can see where it says this comment's been deleted for breach of the house rules. And you think, and these ones don't breach the house rules, that you can just say the reason they die young is their fault.
Life, the logic comes and goes. They talk too fast and think too slow. Changing minds from hour to hour. Your logic stinks, I need to shower. Fallacy, a fallacy in the Wildcats. Fallacy, it's a fallacy, a fallacy in the Wildcats.
Fallacy, fallacy, fallacy.
There you go. Of course, the Pet Shop Boys with What Have I Done to Deserve This?
In the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to look at the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective, and this week our first example actually comes from Bill O'Reilly, friend of the show.
Aha, yeah, yeah.
This is from his radio show in August of 2006. We don't have a clip. I've scoured the internet, but it doesn't seem to exist anymore. But he was discussing right. an 18-year-old who was murdered, well, raped and murdered, unfortunately. And he said, Jennifer Moore, 18, on her way to college, she was 5'2", 105 pounds, wearing a miniskirt and a halter top with a bare midriff. Now, again, there you go. So every predator in the world is going to pick that up at 2 in the morning. So, I mean, this is classic victim blaming.
Right. So not the predators,
not the predators'
nothing
fault.
Nothing to do with the predators. No,
it is. Yeah, she was.
You know, they're just ordinary people. The fact that he uses the word predator is quite telling.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know that surely somebody who predates on somebody else is they're the baddie.
I mean, it's essentially saying, you know, accept that there are predators out there and don't make bad choices.
Yeah,
like this person did.
Yeah, you know, don't lead them on. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, sadly, this is so typical. It's almost a cliche. Basically, that I mean, it is a cliche, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if someone is attacked, it's what were you wearing?
And it's 15 years on, and you know, Sarah Everard, who died at the hands of a off-duty policeman who raped and killed her. Same thing happened. Like the first day, everyone was going, "Oh my God, that's terrible." Second day, well, what was she wearing? And she was walking home on her own. What could you expect? Really?
Yeah. So our second example comes from the movie Trading Places. Fantastic. But having rewatched it recently, still a little bit problematic in places. Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd comedy.
It's not aged well. Yeah.
but still funny. This is where the brothers, Randolph and Mortimer, first come up with their plan to swap successful Dan Aykroyd and a homeless Eddie Murphy to see what happens.
Winthrop is a very steady young man. We're lucky to have him managing our firm for us.
Oh, hogwash. Exeter, Harvard, he's the product of good environment.
It's got nothing to do with environment. With his genes, you could put Winthrop anywhere and he's going to come out on top. Breeding, Randolph, same as in racehorses. It's in the blood.
So Randolph is in favour of the nurture side of the debate, whereas Mortimer is very much in the nature side. He thinks that it's basically good people have got where they are, successful people have got where they are because of who they are, because of their genes, because of all of that stuff. Whereas Randolph says you put a person in the right situation and they will thrive. And he ultimately is proven right in that. He wins the $1 bet that they make on these people's lives.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for like 40-year-old film. Yeah. And, basically this whole film is kind of this fallacy. It is investigating the two sides of that debate about is it about luck or in inherent traits that people have.
Well, it's an update of My Fair Lady, isn't it? It's the same thing where the guy plucked the woman off the street and said, I can get her to pass.
Yeah, but it's also the obverse of that as well, because they ruined Dan Aykroyd's life and he turns to crime. So, yeah, it's kind of My Fair Lady plus the reverse of it.
Plus Boys from Brazil.
Yeah. So our final example is from a woman called Amanda Platell. She's an Australian journalist, works for the Daily Mail. And I think she was press secretary for, I think it was William Hague, the Tory MP.
Wow.
former Conservative leader.
Well, he was the leader for a while and kind of teenage Thatcher fan.
So needless to say, she's an awful, awful person.
Yeah, needless to say.
And this is her views on obesity, which she has dined out on, for want of a better phrase, again and again at the Mail. She keeps writing articles about this.
Do you know what I really wanted for breakfast this morning? It was one of those fantastic big bacon sandwiches with lots of slabs of white bread and brown sauce and a couple of fried eggs. That was my dream. So what did I have for breakfast? I had a banana and some yogurt. And why did I do that? Because I made a choice. I don't want to be fat. So I was absolutely staggered to hear that the government's planning now to give gastric surgery, basically giving people a gastric band, to all of the obese people in this country. The operation costs between £5,000 and £10,000. The stats for what they're worth are that we now have almost a third of the entire British population is obese. So you do the maths on what that is going to cost us, because those people chose to have a bacon sandwich in the morning and not a banana.
Yeah. So fat people are fat because they eat bacon sandwiches instead of bananas, and it's their own fault, and they shouldn't get help from the NHS.
So what she's saying is, it's all very well to want a bacon sandwich with double fried egg and bread and stuff, but if you need to choose not to, like I did, which is the right choice, and then you won't be fat, and then you won't be a drain on the NHS. And the only reason that people are fat is because they choose to eat bacon.
Yeah.
That's fundamentally it, which is the wrong choice. That's the bad thing to do.
Eating bacon is never the wrong thing to do.
No, absolutely. It is. It is.
In every situation.
The gods. Yeah.
If one of your options is eating bacon, I mean, that is by default the right answer.
Do that. Yeah.
As I said at the beginning, we all have this cognitive bias of attributing our own success to our ability and choices and other people's failures to their choices. But it seems like some people take it more to extremes, and it's whether you're fat or poor or assaulted or sexually harassed or shot, it's your own fault.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, you'd like people to believe that my appalling score is all my fault, but what you fail to realise is I'm fighting the law of averages here, and that's the real culprit. Nothing to do with me.
The situation you find yourself in, it's just bad luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bad luck, heaped upon bad luck. Nothing to do with the wrong choices, even though this is a game of
specifically
choice.
About choosing.
Yeah, and it's specifically about choosing the right one, or not choosing the wrong one. Yeah.
So, our theme this time is, we've done this before, actually. We did this back in episode 54, I think we did this. It is, these are statements that Trump has put out through his website, because he can't use Twitter, so he pays Liz Harrington to do almost nothing but copy and paste his statements into her Twitter account.
Ranty shit. Yeah, right.
And the reason that I thought we'd go back to it is because this week he released a statement which in its entirety said in all caps, "Bullies never fight."
Right.
And I've got no idea what the fuck he's talking about, neither does anyone else. Maybe he's talking about Cuomo, but it's not entirely clear, or if he is, what that means. But anyway, he did that. It drew a bit more attention back to his statements that he puts out. So here are three statements that he has made recently through faux Twitter. Number one, this was after Tom Brady visited the White House and had a bit of a joke with Joe Biden. "Tom Shady needs to do his research and realise how rigged, and rigged it was, the last election was. Maybe he was too busy deflating balls, weak grip, to follow what is happening all around our great country, including Maricopa County, Georgia and Pennsylvania. When I'm back at the White House, we'll see who he jokes with. The answer is me, your favourite president, if I even invite him. So much voter fraud."
Whoa. Yeah, it's a bouncing ball of madness, that one. Yeah.
Statement number two. I turned down two book deals from the most unlikely of publishers, in that I do not want to do such a deal right now. I'm writing like crazy anyway, however, and when the time comes, you'll see the book of all books. Actually, I've been working on a much more important project right now.
So, yeah, he's writing like crazy. No, yeah. He does write like crazy anyway. Yeah, I'm writing like crazy anyway. Yeah, we know.
That is a great description of how he writes. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I'm writing like crazy. Doing the book of all books, and actually I'll be working something more important. So despite the fact he's turned down two book deals, the most unlikely of publishers. Well, who's that then? Dr. Seuss? I don't know. Who would that be? The people that put this, the straight to the bargain bin people. But I don't want to do that because I'm writing like that and I'm doing this really important thing. And actually I've just thought of something else that I'm doing, which means I can't write. So don't ask me. And he didn't even say that. Like live, he just put it out.
No, this is written.
He wrote that down and got somebody to post it.
Yeah.
Man.
Statement number three. Nobody had ever heard of some of these people that worked for me in DC. All of a sudden, the fake news starts calling them. Some of them, by no means all, feel emboldened, brave, and for the first time in their lives, they feel like something special, not the losers that they are. And they talk, talk, talk. Many say I am the greatest star maker of all time, but some of the stars I produced are actually made of garbage.
Many say I'm the greatest star. No, but nobody said that.
Many, who are his
stars?
Many
name
that.
Me three stars you've made. Many, many, many. Yeah, there's one more than a few. Yeah, and some of the stars I produce are actually made of garbage. Then they're not stars? I don't know. Yeah. It's like the plot of Wall-E, isn't it? Nobody ever said something. All of a sudden, the fake news starts. Okay, all right. Turn down two book deals. See, the thing is, if we don't get the joyful thing of hearing him say him. That's the...
No.
But some of them
sound
like...
No, you'll just have to
like
take my word for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, I want written evidence. Yeah. Tom Shady. Okay, the whole stuff about like... okay. I really want the book deal one to happen. And I really like the first one. But then that I could be just being lured into a false, it's a lure. I mean, in a false sense of Trumpness. Okay, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to make the wrong and bad choice. I'm going to say that, despite all that, fake news, now I'm all convinced by that one. Stars are made of garbage. Something about that first sentence that sounds a bit Jim. So, okay, so I'm going to have number three is the one you made up.
Okay, so of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
The two book deals.
Okay, so statement number two.
Convince is a strong word. Yeah.
Is.
Yeah.
Real. That is a statement that he put out. He is writing like crazy.
He's writing like crazy. Wow. I'm the most unlikely of publishers. I can't think. What we need is somebody that publishes exam papers or something like that. Somebody that publishes rectal examination testing kit instructions or something like that. I would like to buy. I think the title of the book should be "Writing Like Crazy." That should be the title.
You also thought number one was real. Number one is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fake news.
Oh, good work. Nice.
I can't take credit for that, actually. This was posted on Twitter by not Liz Harrington, someone else. But it went round as if it was a real statement. Everyone basically believed it and was passing it around going, oh, look, can you believe what you said now? Kind of thing. Although it's Poe's law all over again, it's really hard, as I've discovered, to write stuff that is crazier than the stuff he would normally say.
So
you can write bullshit, and it's like, yep, I can totally believe that Trump would have said that. It's like when we had that day
the
where
bot that did it.
Someone said he'd put his trousers on back to front stood at a podium, and everyone was like, I can totally believe that. Yep. That does not seem unlikely at all. It turned out not to be true. But the fact that everyone
people just
like,
went,
yeah, that sounds like him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All those ones that the bot wrote. Remember we had that, the Trump bot that did stuff. And then you just think, oh, yeah, perfectly convincing. Because it's just that, well, this one, the reason I was convinced by that was that it does that kind of the slowly bouncing ball that's losing energy through, you know, noise and heat and all that stuff. And it just goes from, okay, this ever trailing off thought and with a, and it gets in a,
yeah,
you know, it's about me, you know, who, let's see who he jokes with. Well, the answer's me. If I even invite him, it's just, and then to, you know, top it all off with, I like the so fact much voter fraud.
Again, in a convincing way, he put, the answer is me, your favourite president, and president is in quotes.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump does very frequently is using
that kind of accidental
quote thing.
Yeah.
So, which means that number three was real. He did say that some of the stars he produced are made of garbage.
No way. Oh, my God.
This was when he... there were basically new books coming out. I don't know why, but they all came out in a bit of a flurry. Just a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
From people who had worked at the White House. And, this was basically him saying...
Well, they were desperate to...
All of these people who are saying bad things about me. They're losers.
Yeah. Because they're losers. They're really famous. Yes, exactly. Even though I made some of them out of garbage. It's just such a shit thing to say, isn't it? It's not presidential, is it? It's not even ex-presidential. It's just the continuing blarney from an aggrieved failure. There you go. And that's my verdict. Yeah.
Excellent. I've got my
episode. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that means so we're up to 70 games and I'm down to
33 out of 70.
Oh, I'm still on 33.
Which is 47%. You're almost at the 50. Just a few more games.
I thought the law of averages and the law won.
Yes, it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Arizona Audits Are Still Not a Logical Fallacy, because they're still going on, kind of, in a way.
Yeah.
But they're not going anywhere. It's just appalling. I mean, we knew that they weren't going to go anywhere, but the efforts continue. So the latest news is that the Republican Senate leaders in Arizona requested the routers, as we heard when Trump was saying, where are the routers? And the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, who are involved in actually running the election, wrote the best letter back to them to explain in part why they wouldn't be getting the routers and they wouldn't basically be getting any further help from that. So I'm going to read the letter almost in its entirety. Dear Senators, it is now August of 2021. The election of November 2020 is over. If you haven't figured out that the election in Maricopa County was free, fair and accurate yet, I'm not sure you ever will. The reason you haven't finished your, in quotes, audit is because you hired people who have no experience and little understanding of how professional elections are run. The board has real work to do and little time to entertain this adventure in Never Never Land. Please finish whatever it is you're doing and release whatever it is you're going to release.
Finished what we're doing.
There was no fraud. Yeah. There wasn't an injection of ballots from Asia, nor was there a satellite that beamed votes into our election equipment. It's time for all elected officials to tell the truth and stop encouraging conspiracies. Release your report and be prepared to defend any accusations of misdeeds in court. It's time to move on.
Nice.
And that is exactly what needs to be said to these people. Just grow up.
Brilliant.
These things didn't happen. You're just wasting everyone's time. Get over it.
Put out the thing that you say that you're threatening. And I love that bit. And when it's a kind of a counter demand, which says, you know, just be prepared to defend any accusation of misdeeds. So you're going to come out with this report and then we'll all just go, well, you've made all this shit up.
Yeah.
And you're trying to pass it off and you can't get away with doing that without some kind of comeback, because it's you're bringing the reputation of free and fair elections into disrepute purely on a political basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So an example of one of the kinds of claims that they are likely to make, because they've already made it, is from Doug Logan, is that there were 74,000 phantom mail-in ballots that were counted, even though there was no record of them being sent out. So by which they mean, in fact, it was 74,241 people listed as voting by early ballot who aren't on what's called the EV32 reports, which is the list of postal ballots that were sent out. So at first glance, without knowing anything about how elections are run,
we'll just do it on first glance.
May sound reasonable.
It's suspicious because you're going, well, rather than just asking an election official, what's the reason for that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But if those ballots weren't sent out to people in the post, but those people still voted early by using those ballots, how did they get them? You know, what's going on? This is almost this is 74,000 ballots. So, you know, a paper, the Arizona Mirror and ABC 15, local ABC station, you know, just asked a question, looked into it for 5 minutes. it turns out that...
You didn't do the on first glance thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It turns out that 99.4% of those people, 73,819, voted in person at early voting centres. So their votes were early ballots, but they didn't need a ballot to be posted out to them. Because that's how the election works in Arizona.
Exactly.
You can go there, vote before election day. It still counts.
It's counted. So not all postal votes are early, and not all early votes are postal.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. You can go to the voting place pre-election day and vote in person. You don't need to have applied for an early ballot. You really only need to do that if you are posting your ballot. Because you need to have something in your house, basically, that you can write your vote on. And that is a trivially easy thing to find out if you have any concept of how the election is run. But as Jack Zellers says...
Or if you don't, you would find someone to ask.
You would think so, yeah. But as he says, they hired people who have no experience and little understanding of how professional elections are run. I mean, the entire thing basically has been a shit show from beginning to end. From trying to kind of maintain the building, they've ruined all of the voting machines. They can't be used anymore because they've essentially gone in and messed them up in a way that means, now, ironically, they can't be sure that they are secure for the next election, essentially.
Yeah.
Because they've been messed with by people who don't know what they're doing. And I mean, we await to see what their outcome is.
Where that ends up in the courts, whether it ends up in the courts.
I mean, it seems
them answering misdeeds.
It seems inevitable at this stage, as it has for a while now, that it's going to be very similar to the Kraken lawsuit thing. Where they are going to make their various claims, just as Mike Lindell has been doing in his cyber symposium over the last few days. They make a claim, and then someone who knows what they're talking about says, "Well, that's bullshit, and here's why," and that claim goes away immediately.
This is what happened. Yeah, and the thing about the Kraken stuff was even more. Because it's become a kind of meta thing, because it's no longer about, well, it's, you know, the whole election thing was fine. The accusations that you're making are untrue. So what they're now doing is saying the lawyers are saying, well, these untrue accusations, we ought to be allowed to submit them because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
So some of those things are happening. And so it's just going to go on and on and on and on, because the lawyers are making
that will absolutely be used, I'm sure, in this when this comes out, is they will list kind of 20 different infractions where they found some anomaly, or claim that they found some anomaly. And even though each one will be explained away by people who know what they're talking about, they will say, but look, we found so many problems. I am confident that will be one of their arguments.
They'll go, so there's got to be a problem because we found so many problems.
Yeah.
Yes, but all of those have been counted you could have sorted that out, and hopefully they'll have the justice they've got on the Kraken case. We'll just say, as a lawyer, did you not think that you ought to be doing little bit of due diligence, a little bit of stuff? Oh, no, because, you know, this is what they said. They said that they thought that it might be something that was a bit unusual. Okay, so it's a fact they were speculating. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's all these facts. No, it's a fact that he was making stuff up. Yeah, so it's you're right. It will happen. There will be a next level down where they will say, well, we've got this is surely it is true by sheer weight of numbers. And you go, well, if you're using that argument, the election was true by sheer weight of numbers, was it not? Isn't that not the definition of the bloody election? But I love the way he opens that letter with. It's now August 2020.
Yeah.
You know, the election of November 2020, a long time ago. Yeah. And it's getting further away. You know, just hurry up and publish. Publish your bloody thing and let's see what you've actually got. You know, yeah. Rather than continually ask us for more stuff. You know, can you give us the air, the dead space between the server room and the outside world that isolated the servers from the internet? Can you give us that air? Because we're sure that there's not enough oxygen molecules or something.
Doug Logan, the head of Cyber Ninjas, has finally also come clean about who is funding part of this, at least. Because there was always $150,000 from the Republican Senate, but it's actually cost over $5 million. Been contributed by people. I don't know how. It's contributed by people, by political groups run by prominent Trump supporters, including Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, Patrick Byrne, and correspondents from One America News Network. So,
wow.
I mean, it's not surprising at all. It's not they all wasn't expecting that. It's exactly who we expected was funding it.
But it's that kind of. But no, see, nobody is saying to Doug Logan. Okay, are you not just an utter charlatan?
Well, the Arizona Mirror is.
They decided
that the, especially with this absentee voting statistic that they came out with, they said the Mirror concludes that Logan could have only made such an egregiously false claim through either profound incompetence or rank dishonesty. They said Logan, who was in charge of a team tasked with determining whether there were problems with the 2020 general election in Maricopa County, either didn't take the basic step of checking the names against the master list of voters or knowingly told the world something that was untrue. Yeah.
There you go. That's very polite of them, isn't it? That's
absolutely.
Kind of quite fair, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, let's leave open the possibility that he's just stupid.
Rather than worrying, you know, about how do I earn a billion, $1 trillion. Excellent.
So we'll be keeping tabs on what comes out of Maricopa County, but I don't expect it's something that is going to trouble us much.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Say what you like about anti-vaxxers, but you've got to admire their principles. They're just not prepared to put untested remedies containing God knows what into their bodies, no matter what. What's that? They're eating horse deworming paste. Fuck me. Yes, in the desperate attempt to prove they know more than science by killing themselves, anti-vaxxers have seized on a small study from Egypt, published on a preprint website before it was peer-reviewed, which said the antiparasitic drug ivermectin had shown promise in treating COVID. The fact that paper was subsequently pulled due to ethical concerns including plagiarism and calculation of data points which were, quote, mathematically impossible, increased their interest, if anything. And so, spurred on no doubt by Republican politicians such as Senator Ron Johnson promoting the drug, started to ask their doctors for a prescription. Dr. Stella Emanuel, the demon sperm lady we talked about back in episode 55, gladly wrote prescriptions, but all the non-crazy doctors were a bit reluctant, so the truth-phobic wackaloons went instead to farm supply stores which sell ivermectin for deworming horses and sheep. The fact that those remedies are dosed for horses that weigh over a ton, even heavier than most Trump supporters, is probably why there has been what one Texas Poison Control Center worker described as a noticeable increase in calls regarding ivermectin misuse.
In the oft-repeated defence of her upbringing, Eliza Doolittle says on several occasions to Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady, "I'm a good girl, I am." It's endearing, it's charming, it's indicative of her background and how she'll not stand for being insulted by Higgins in this social experiment to pass her off as a high-born lady at the upcoming race meeting at Ascot. Not really something that one would hope would stand up, say, in a court of law, right? Wrong. Representing himself, he has a fool for a client. Second appearance in the show, Senator Mo Brooks, I did read it originally as Mel Brooks, and I'm not far off, asked to be dismissed from Eric Swalwell's lawsuit alleging a conspiracy to incite the January 6th riot. The heart of Mo's argument is that when he spoke at Trump's rally on January the 6th, he was acting within the scope of his employment and therefore has immunity from Swalwell's lawsuit. It's like working for Trump will mean you're innocent? Well, anyway, okay then, Mo, where's your proof or your shreds of evidence? Well, in his defence, he did present several facts, and the court document lists these somewhat tongue-in-cheek under the heading Verified Brooks Facts. Among them, number one, he's 67. Number two, he's never smoked tobacco. Number six, he's never had a motor vehicle wreck in which anyone claimed he was at fault. And then it gets slightly odder. Seven includes he has always been faithful to his wife. Together they've raised four children, all of whom are married, none of whom have been divorced, all of whom are law-abiding, none of whom have ever been arrested for anything, all of whom had college degrees and jobs. And between them, blessed him with 10 grandchildren, with two twins, twins mind, two of them, and another granddaughter on the way. Well, with that amount of innocence by association, case dismissed. What more do you need? Me, I need a chorus of "The Rain in Spain Falls Mainly on the Plane" and someone dragging him to the cells, shouting, "Move your blooming arse!"
Remember just a couple of minutes ago when you thought you'd heard the stupidest an anti-vaxxer can get?
Yeah.
Well, the New York Times talked to employees of an eyewear company in the Big Apple to find out their opinions on the vaccine and found a range of ideas, including one employee who said she was concerned because she thought a vaccine had caused the characters in the film I Am Legend to turn into zombies. This is upsettingly not just the ravings of a lone, disturbed Will Smith fan. It is, in fact, a claim widely shared through social media, with many noting that in the movie it took a couple of years for the vaccine to have this devastating effect. So just because the millions of people who've been vaccinated aren't trying to eat your brains yet, it doesn't mean they won't. Aside from the simple fact it was not actually a vaccine, but a genetically modified virus that led to the zombie vampires in the film, there's one other important thing to remember about this. I think the screenwriter of I Am Legend, Akiva Goldsman, put it best when he tweeted, "Oh my God, it's a movie. I made that up. It's not real."
And it seems like only moments ago we were extolling the virtues of the Getter online platform. Nah, we were taking the piss big time. Well, the boundaries of the freedom of speech they say they uphold there are being pushed to its limits, as online jihadists have been flooding the boards with pro-ISIS propaganda. This, of course, despite Trump having defeated ISIS. Remember that? He told us often enough it must be true. Helpfully in response, Jason Miller, Trump acolyte and Getter platform founder, assured us that the only ISIS members still alive are keyboard warriors hiding in caves and eating dirt cookies. Okay, so Trump didn't fail then. Phew! Oh, and that's some Wi-Fi they've got in them caves, because they're posting After Effects altered videos of Trump in an orange jumpsuit being executed by militants. How long before the constant conflict of it's free speech, but hey, wait, that's anti-Trump and that's just a tad anti-US, and his attempts at double-speaking it away and making Trump good in the process finally make Miller's head explode? I've seen the film Scanners, and actually, that's morbidly fascinating. Just saying.
I mean, if you look at Jason Miller, his head is always just on the verge of exploding.
Of exploding, anyway. And I hope he has that kind of the name tag still on his shirt so you can see what his head looked like before. Yeah.
In the wealthy Dallas suburb of Highland Park, residents received a letter in their mailboxes last month from a group called Dallas Justice Now. The letter began, "We are writing to you because we understand you are white," and went on to demand that the wealthy white folk pledge not to send their kids to Ivy League schools in order to make space for students of colour. A note on the Associated website says, "Please note, Dallas Justice Now will be publicly announcing the names of those who have and have not signed the pledge." Naturally, it raised some ire and garnered some press, including a feature on Tucker Carlson Tonight, which legally means it's bullshit. This is such an obvious right-wing hoax, it's shocking that the letter isn't signed by Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman, but so far at least they're not involved. However, Dallas Justice Now has been traced back to right-wing PR firm Arena, because the right are as bad at covering their tracks as they are at humour and politics.
I'm a bit sad that it isn't Jacob Wall and Jack
Berkman. I really thought when I saw the story it was going to be.
It's so got to be, yeah. It's just like third paragraph in, there they are! No, yeah. Woke means you lose. Everything that is woke goes bad. Trump said that, so of course that's true, except he lost, but he's not woke. He's bad, but he's not woke. Yeah, never mind that. Never mind. Without remembering that he's an ex-president and a future inmate, Trump weighed in a Piers Morgan kind of way, I guess, and pontificated about the progress of the US women's soccer team in the Japan Olympics. Big sports pundit he's not, but trigger meister troll he is.
If our soccer team, headed by a radical group of leftist maniacs, wasn't woke, they would have won the gold medal instead of the bronze.
Late to the knee-taking Marxist memes from the European soccer tournament, Trump also ignored the fact that Canada, whose team has spent much of the last week showing support for their non-binary and trans midfielder Quinn, won the gold medal. Still, anything to do down his fellow Americans, in the name of his fellow Americans, and Trump will be there, talking shite, whilst on the only gold thing he's ever won. Oh no, paid for, a fucking gold toilet.
I used to think that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was stupid, but I'm not so sure anymore. See, Ron wants to be president, and he saw how popular Trump was among Republicans after his handling of the pandemic cost hundreds of thousands of American lives. So Ron seems to have decided his best shot at the Republican nomination is to kill as many Floridians as he can. The fucking scary thing is I'm not even sure he's wrong. In the state that is responsible for almost 18% of all the new coronavirus cases in the US, where deaths are up over 50% from last week, during a surge in the Delta variant, which is far more likely than other strains to infect children, DeSantis is fighting hard to stop schools mandating masks for their students, even threatening to withhold the salary of school board officials who try to, you know, value the lives of children. Vacuous traitor Lauren Boebert tweeted this week, "Democrats want to turn the country into Portland, Republicans want to turn the country into Florida," Nuff said. And she thought that was a point for her side.
In British politics this week, I escaped Boris Island and I'm in France, having moved my return date to a week earlier because of having to self-isolate back in the UK due to the hastily made-up traffic light warning colour called Amber Plus that only applied to France. Returning from the rest of the entirety of Europe with two vaccines and a certificate would mean you're fine and could go straight back to normal life and to work and not need to use any more leave, etc., etc. But not France. Oh, no. Some cases of the beta variant of the virus were counted on the French territory of La Réunion, which is about 6,000 miles from Paris. But this, of course, meant that the whole of France was dangerous. In reality, i.e. not in Boris's head, the cases in La Réunion were less than parts of Europe, and those in Paris less than those in the UK. But anyway, it was nothing to do with Macron's objections to the UK government trying to tear up the oven-ready Brexit withdrawal agreement that's turned out to be half-baked and causes major problems with tearing up the Northern Ireland peace agreement. No, of course, bien sûr, nothing, rien. I left England on the day that the UK government changed it back to ordinary amber, so I don't have to isolate. Yeah, thanks. I could have spent another week not in the sunlit uplands of post-Brexit Britain. Jealousy alert, it's been 31 degrees and bright sunshine here all week, and red wine is less than $3 a bottle. Vive la Révolution!
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our straw man level patrons, Max Beaver, Kaz Tui, Stephen Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, and our top true Scotsman level patron, Lauren. Thanks so much, everyone. We really do appreciate your continued support.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye. Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.